Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Burdick, news editor at Foresight Health. On today's episode of Foresight Friday Roundup, we're going to talk about two regulatory changes that could have lasting effects on how care is delivered and paid for in the U.S. So today on the Roundup, we're talking about CMS's changes to the Physician Self-Referral Law, commonly known as STARK, after its congressional author, the late Fortney Pete Stark, and CMS's new Hospital at Home Waiver Program. To tell us how these changes will affect the industry are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you guys doing this morning?
Well, like last spring, I've stopped going to the barber, so it's a race to see whether we open back up before I get a ponytail.
I can't wait to see that. Julie, how about you?
You know, Northern California is finally starting to see the rage here. So that vaccine news we discussed a couple weeks ago still creates some hope, but that reality has me back on my heels. And I have to say, my coping tactic is to listen to more yacht rock these days, which my kids hate, but it's making me very happy.
I don't even know what that is. Yacht rock.
Check it out. Sirius Radio. It's all the fun-loving, kitschy music of yesteryear.
All right. Well, I'm sure I'll love it.
Okay. Well, great. Very interesting. All right. Before we talk about physician self-referrals and hospitals at home, let's talk about Thanksgiving, which now seems like it was a year ago, right? Since all of us stayed at home for Thanksgiving, just like the CDC said we should, I was curious if you guys tried to make any new exotic dishes for Thanksgiving. Dave, did you cook up anything special?
Yeah, we made a savory mushroom dish with fennel, garlic, croutons, and black lentils. The only problem was the black lentils are really tiny, and we keep finding them in various places inside the kitchen. So...
That's great. Julie, how about you? Did you try out any new recipes?
Well, sort of, Dave. You know, we're a pretty steady family when it comes to Thanksgiving, and we make the same traditional dishes every year and love every carb of it. But the one thing we do year after year usually is fry our turkey. And since there were only four of us, it just didn't really seem worth the effort. So we actually bought a pre-cooked turkey, I'm embarrassed to say, and it was pretty good.
Wow. All right. Well, I'll stick with that turkey theme. Our new recipe was turkey. It's always on someone else to cook up the bird. So not this year, but it came out pretty well. And who knows, maybe next year we'll try something like fish, right? Going out on a limb, Dave.
I think you should try frying your turkey like Julie does.
So. All right.
Oh, it's so good. You should definitely try it.
Okay, cool. All right, speaking of change and new food habits, let's talk regulatory change. Dave, CMS issued final regulations that change how the agency will enforce the Stark Law. Tell us what CMS did, why CMS did it, and how the regulations could impact care delivery models moving forward.
Well, the law was named for Pete Stark from California, Julie's home state, and passed in 1989. Stark was a big, and I mean big, presence in health policy in the 1980s and 1990s. He railed against referral arrangements that improperly benefited providers financially. For example, physicians that over-directed patients to imaging centers they owned, or those that received kickbacks payments for referrals, because we know those types of things never, ever happen in healthcare. So the Stark Law addressed these concerns and carries big monetary and financial penalties. In recent years, providers have complained with some justification that the Stark Laws impede their ability to adopt value-based delivery models. So what did CMS do and why did they do it? First, the what. The new rules have four areas of focus: permanent exceptions for value-based arrangements, additional guidance on exceptions to self-physician referral laws, protection for non-abusive beneficial arrangements, and reduced administrative burden. For the most part, the new rules take effect in 60 days and receive industry support. The why: to accelerate providers' ability to adopt value-based care delivery. The impact, unfortunately, more sizzle than steak. Over 80% of healthcare payment remains in fee-for-service vehicles. The new Stark Law rules will lead to incremental improvement in value-based care delivery, but they won't achieve the type of transformative impact the administration desires or claims they will. Reminds me of the 1990s MTV show, Pimp My Ride. You know, a jalopy gets new paint and electronics, but it's still a jalopy. You know, watch out for those brakes. The new laws or the new rules will marginally improve healthcare for the better, but it remains a revenue optimizing, not value driven system. So I'm back to my old mantra, my continuous mantra. We won't change the way we deliver care in America until we change the way we pay for care in America.
Thanks, Dave. Julie, what are the pros and cons of the new regulations? Who wins, who loses? And if I'm a Medicare beneficiary, why do I care?
Well, first I have to say I kind of agree with Dave overall. You know, it does really attempt, though, to structurally encourage value-based arrangements through collaboration and the like. So it's taking a step forward away from fee-for-service, which is good. It does simplify, you know, the burden on providers, which I think providers need these days. And, you know, one of the pros I saw that I thought was really positive is from the proposed of the final rule, they created eligibility for labs, durable medical equipment, and pharma to also participate in this kind of more value-driven way. And I think some of that can create innovation in both arrangements with providers and payers, as well as ultimately in product innovation, which is where, you know, a lot of costs can be. And I think that's positive. Now, on the con side, I've seen some folks be concerned about things like the definitions that the new rule brings into, you know, into life, things like value-based activities and value-based entity participation. These are, you know, phrases that don't have clear legal meaning. So there are some concerns that this is going to be a field day for lawyers, and we're going to spend a ton of money on interpretation around this. So we'll see what happens. You know, overall, I think, though, you know, most people would say that this is a fairly good swing at right-sizing Stark, but it really benefits hospitals and health systems most. So, you know, major associations like America's Essential Hospitals and America Telehealth Association were super supportive. On the flip side, you have folks at the Medical Group Management Association, MGMA, who said it didn't go far enough to remove roadblocks for physicians, nor is it a panacea to, you know, get physicians into value-based arrangements. Yeah, I think at the end of the day, Dave was right. What physicians will struggle with as it relates to value-based arrangements like ACOs or bundled payment approaches is really the practice change and the business model change that those are going to require. And while this Stark rule is super helpful, it's not the end-all be-all. And Mary Greeley said it best, honestly, president of Health Leadership Council, that the biggest loser here really is innovation, because they had the opportunity to really write this law in a way that encouraged patient-focused, patient-centric innovation in a multi-sector collaborative way. And the rule feels a little bit more focused around fraud and abuse protections than it does, you know, true patient focus. So innovation perhaps might be the biggest loser. We'll see. You know, Dave, you asked about why should a Medicare beneficiary care? I think at the end of the day, one message here is that the intent is to make sure that referrals are based on what's clinically appropriate and not financially best for the physician. So, you know, hopefully that becomes the truth coming out of all this.
Dave, anything to add to Julie's comments, specifically what it means for a beneficiary?
Well, we're clearly in the same place on this. Dostoevsky wrote, nothing focuses the mind like an execution. I think nothing will focus the minds of providers like full downside risk contracting. That's when we'll start to see real transformation. My first level litmus test on whether a law or a reg is truly beneficial is what's the AHA's position on that new law or reg? And the AHA came out very positively for these new Stark laws. So immediately my antenna go up.
Right. It'd be a good topic for a future episode, neutral site payments, right?
Yeah.
Thanks, Dave. And now let's talk about the new hospital at home waiver program. Julie, you get to start this time. Tell us about the program, why CMS took this action, and how do you see hospitals and health systems taking advantage of it?
Well, before I dig in, I just want to say that this might be the one of the most exciting policy developments in years, as far as I'm concerned. And it's really going to solidify major movement towards virtual care and, you know, deeper at-home services. And we've seen countries like Australia, New Zealand, Israel, Spain, Brazil, and others way ahead of us on this hospital at home movement. And while there are some hospitals in the U.S., like Mount Sinai and Mayo, who've been running programs like this for years, we haven't seen more months than years, perhaps, but we haven't seen a scale due mostly to reimbursement requirements, which I think we talk about all the time on this podcast. This program directly impacts the Medicare population, some of whom are at the greatest risk for COVID. So keeping some of those patients at home so they don't have to face either, you know, infection rates or medical error concerns in the hospital, much less COVID, is a great thing. And they launched the program to help health systems who are facing massive capacity challenges across the country due to COVID make sure that patients get the care they need at home. So I think CMS wanted to make sure that their regulations don't keep patients from getting the care they need. It's a waiver program. And Medicare beneficiaries can receive basically hospital-grade care at home for more than 60 acute conditions. And the hospitals that participate in this program need to do, you know, some pretty logical things. It's pretty kind of intense monitoring. They need to screen patients prior to admission. And what I love about it, it's for both medical and non-medical factors like home utilities, physical barriers, domestic violence. And I think this is a great step forward in what we as healthcare nerds refer to as a social determinants of health. And I think, you know, we'll see more of this, which is great. Patients can be admitted from the ED or an inpatient bed. And there are several kind of virtual and inpatient evaluation requirements hospitals need to do. So the physician has to assess a person in person before care begins. And then that person needs to be visited by an RN every day, either virtually or in person. And there are two visits per day by either an RN or a paramedic in person. So there's actually a lot of monitoring that goes on, not to mention all the technology to monitor patients at home, which is a great step forward in understanding how to really do that. And I would say the most important decision around all this is that this decision is made with the patient. It can't be forced upon the patient, which I think is really positive. There are six hospitals in the program so far, and I think we'll see a lot more come through. And honestly, for two reasons. One is studies show that patient satisfaction is much higher and the cost can be much lower. So for both those reasons, hospitals will jump on board here. And the business model implications of what we're seeing here might actually have some long-lasting impact.
Got it. Thanks, Julie. Dave, how do you think the hospital at home waiver program will affect other providers like physicians, home care agencies? And again, more importantly, is this a good thing for healthcare consumers and Medicare beneficiaries?
Well, paraphrasing former Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, never waste a pandemic. Just like with virtual care, it's taken a pandemic to do something really logical that other countries have been doing for a long time, which is turning the home into an acute care setting when it makes sense. So I applaud that with full force for all the reasons that Julie so eloquently laid out. So to me, the big winners are our consumers and Medicare beneficiaries, and then also companies like Medically Home, Contessa Health, Dispatch Health that contract with hospitals that provide in-home acute care services, and the physicians and agencies that also participate in that. To the extent that this pushes more acute care into the home, that's a very good thing. But I think we still have to ask again, why has the U.S. lagged other nations in moving toward this very logical way of providing care? And I believe healthcare as an industry is very mature from a services perspective. So 80%+ of the conditions with which patients present, we know what to do. And other industries, when they mature in a service perspective, decentralize, and in order to get closer to customers, in order to lower costs, in order to increase convenience. And hospital at home is clearly a part of this movement. However, healthcare continues to be immature from an organizational perspective, still overly reliant on high-cost centralized delivery models. And so when you see why adoption is slow, it's because the system still overly rewards this high-cost centralized way of delivering care. It's a little bit like Watergate, except in Healthgate, well, the lesson's the same, still follow the money, and the money, the incentives still push us toward too much care in hospitals and not enough care in decentralized locations, including the home.
Thanks, Dave. Julie, anything to add to Dave's comments?
As usual, Dave says it all, but I'll just offer that I had the good fortune of being in a discussion with John Halamka this week about Mayo's experience in hospital at home. And no surprise, they have found some pretty incredible outcomes for patients and for their business model. And the throughput here, I think, is a huge opportunity. So while I agree with Dave that reimbursement remains a major impediment to really scaling this, hospitals and health systems who can really figure out the operational model here and the workforce approach could have a whole new revenue model if they do it right.
Amen to that.
All right. Now, as always on the roundup, we get to talk about next week. Julie, what's the big healthcare headline the week of December 7th?
To be honest, Dave, this is the most stressful part of the podcast. You know, I have to say two things that are very different. When I thought about this and I was looking back over the last, 8 to 12 weeks, we have seen either a major M&A transaction or a SPAC announcement every 2 to 3 weeks. And I think we're due. So I think there might be something on that horizon. And to echo what Dave said last week, I saw an article around how overdoses were up dramatically last week. And I worry a lot about the holidays. And I think, as Dave said last week, we're going to start to see more in the headlines about loneliness, overdosing, mental health, et cetera. So the holidays will bring us a different news stream, I think.
Interesting. Dave, you've brought up Pearl Harbor on the roundup before. It is the week of December 7th. What's the big healthcare bombshell next week?
Well, I did 10 radio interviews yesterday on the new vaccine rollout and the potential for misinformation to keep people from embracing what is almost a universally good story. These vaccines appear to be terrific. So I think we're going to see a lot of attention on the vaccine front, where it's getting delivered, how it's getting delivered, how we manage the rollout. You saw yesterday that former presidents Obama, Clinton, and Bush have agreed to get their shots on live TV. You know, hopefully that's not going to be in their butts. So I think that's going to be the big topic.
Yeah, I was just thinking that if anybody searches Pimp My Ride and executions, they'll be able to call up this podcast. I think that's great for SEO.
Okay.
Something to shoot for.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Julie. That's all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You can also find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, and other streaming services. Thanks again for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.